Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Geek Matrix DC Comics Review Show, episode number 190. We are here every week talking the week's releases from DC Comics and a little bit more. As always, we like to go on tangents and just talk about whatever the hell we want.
Oh, we do.
I think it's fun. At least I have fun with it. It's one of my favorite things throughout the week. Keeps me going through the work.
Amen to that one.
Yeah. Well, you heard his voice. He's with me today. It's Josh.
Hey, sorry about that.
I know we talked about you getting into your Michigan accent, but you're going to fucking apologize for shit you didn't do? Like,
oh, Michigan.
Crossing the border now? Like, shit they don't that's do. What I mean. Like, you're stepping over to Windsor now. Like, what the fuck's going on?
Oh, no. He said he's here with me. That's what I apologized for.
All right, so yeah, we got a few books this week, quite a few books this week. We got 8 books in total, 4 on this show, 4 on the bonus show, so be sure to subscribe to our Discord to get access to that show and much more. The books we will be talking about in the bonus show are as follows. If I can get Discord to fucking work. We have Wonder Woman number 7, Titans number 9, Batman, Superman, World's Finest number 25, and Justice Society of America number 9 on the bonus. With this episode will be Green Lantern War Journal number 7, Nightwing number 112, Superman number 12, and Catwoman number 63. So if you're looking forward to our reviews on any of those books, check out either of the shows. Especially if you're here now, you're checking out this show, may as well listen to what we have to talk about these books. I think. Yeah, why not? Just do it there, bud. God.
Not a lot there, bud.
Yes.
All right. In the honorable mentions, of which I will say that I was pleasantly surprised this week. I'll get into more of those, but we've got DC's April special number one, April special number one, Batman 89 Echoes number 2, John Constantine Hellblazer Dead in America number 3, and Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong number 6. Spoiler alert, I liked all of them. You just got to tune into the bonus show to find out why.
That is surprising.
I know, right?
I mean, I don't blame you on Batman 89. I loved the first one. I've yet to start Echoes, which is kind of wild because number one has been out for 3 months.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, literally in my notes, let's see here. Where we go here. Batman 89 Echoes number 2. The last thing that I wrote in my notes before giving the score is, I can't believe Rob isn't reading this.
I know. It's not that I don't want to. I kept forgetting about it. Like, the first issue came out, and I think it was, like, swamped, and then I forgot about it, and it's been months. And now issue 2 is out. I'm like, well, I should probably read issue 1. So I will be getting to that later on, if not tomorrow. Same with Godzilla vs. Kong vs. Justice League.
Are you caught up?
No, I read the first issue and I kind of fell off on that too.
Well, you're gonna have to back burner for now. You're gonna have to hang on to the bonus show and find out whether or not you're gonna want to read that or not.
Oh, I can tell you right now, I'm gonna want to read it. It's Kaijus and DC Comics, two of my favorite things.
Yeah, and it's got some cool stuff going on in this particular penultimate issue. But anyway, those are the honorable mentions. Those are for later. We got the big dogs here now.
Yeah.
They're ready for battle.
Big dogs like Roman Reigns?
Big dogs like Jon Stewart?
Yeah, before we get into that, though, you got any news?
Yeah, I have successfully wasted over 20 hours on WWE 2K24, and I've only had it for 5 days.
I get that.
I didn't play it at all today.
No.
No, it's just been nonstop stuff. Lots of comic work, of course, and then I had a doctor appointment, which is why we are starting late today. That was all. Yeah. You're welcome.
Hey, you're pretty close. I wouldn't call it that late. Partially my fault too. Let's see, what do I got? Well, I found out a couple days ago when I shared it with you guys that I didn't realize. I know that DC has been like pumping out some omnibus and compendiums the past year or so.
Yeah.
Some that the three of us have been fairly excited about for the most part, for some mm-hmm. of them anyway. Collecting some older comics. And we've just been waiting on announcements on a volume 2. Well, I didn't realize that I think around the time it was first announced, the Green Lantern Corps Omnibus, Peter J. Tomasi's Green Lantern Corps Omnibus specifically, volume 1 was announced. Tomasi on Twitter said that a volume 2 is planned.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's yet to be announced, but it was recently posted or uploaded to the Penguin Random House website for sale. Oh, pre-order. Really? Yeah, and it's supposed to come out in September. So volume 2 is coming. And it finishes the...
Is it another $150?
It is. It definitely is. It finishes off the run before New 52. Collects right. The first 20 issues of New 52 and then some other books sporadically throughout. It has all 13 issues of... Wait, does it? Emerald Warriors.
Nice.
And even, I think, a couple issues of New Guardians. But it is missing some Green Lantern Corps main series issues post-Blackest Night because they were written by Tony Bedard, mm-hmm. which I think is kind of weird. I know it's not written by Tomasi, but it's if you're trying to collect the whole fucking story,
but I mean,
you're cutting like 6 issues right there.
Yeah, I mean, in this though, I mean, they're not trying to collect the whole story; they're trying to collect all of Tomasi's work.
But it's kind of weird because then there's other stuff in there too, like Blackest Night number 8.
Oh wow, what the hell?
Yeah, which famously written by Geoff Johns.
Yeah.
Tomasi probably had a hand in it, but like you can get the idea that they added that in because it sets up some stuff in Green Lantern Corps later on.
Fair enough.
You know, that's what I find funny about this is that they're calling it the Green Lantern Corps Omnibus, but like the real title is the Green Lantern Corps by Tomasi and Gleason Omnibus. But right. They insist still on just cutting out specific issues. Because they were not written by Tomasi, but including issues that weren't even part of Green Lantern Corps. Like, I don't fucking understand it. I'm still gonna get it.
Yeah, we'll throw that in there for you.
Yeah, I'm still happy that they're doing it. I think it's a great idea, especially Tomasi. I'm not shy about this at all. I'm very vocal about it. He's one of my favorite writers. Right. So I'm really happy that we're getting this. 2-volume omnibus of Tomasi's Green Lantern Corps. I just wish it had the entire Green Lantern Corps run. Would have been better.
Understandable.
Yeah.
But I guess maybe you need the Green Lantern Corps compendium.
I mean, I would, but then I already got the omnibus.
The compendiums where you get those extra issues, missing issues. Yeah.
Yeah. I just don't think my wife would be happy about me having the same story for a fourth time.
No.
She's already given me weird look having things twice, let alone 3 times. I think 4 might be the limit.
Yeah. 4 might be pushing it.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Green Lantern, and that's not a transition to our reviews yet, I went to Toronto Comic Con over the weekend.
Oh, that's right. My God, yes. I completely forgot.
I was so happy to go. I had to go It's my first time actually going to the Toronto Comic Con. I usually just save my time for Fran Expo. But I got not only, and I've decided I'm just going to start collecting this, some key issues. It's not even showing up. Captain Karen and the Amazing Zoo Crew. Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
I'm happy about that. But I also got to see a couple of people there. Oh, shit, where are they? I know they're here somewhere. A couple of people by the name of Tim Sheridan and Jeremy Adams.
Nice.
Where I got some books signed. Green Lantern, oh. Alan Scott, the Green Lantern number one, signed by Tim Sheridan, as well as Green Lantern number one and number eight, Kyle Rayner variant from Doc Shaner, also signed by Jeremy Adams.
Hell yeah.
Got to have a conversation with the two of them, got a picture taken with both of them, and we just, it was a blast talking. I don't want to break any trust here, because they did kind of tease a couple things first coming up in Green Lantern, and I don't know if they did that on purpose.
Well, he knows you're on our podcast, so yeah. Did they tell you to keep it secret, or
no, that's the
say
thing
anything didn't. Well, then by all means, yeah, let us share it with the world.
I don't know how known in the world it already is. So I had a question for Jeremy Adams, and I know you had a question for me to ask him as well, and I completely forgot. It was a question I wanted to know as well. But I did ask him. I had a theory about the United Planets Lantern Corps, that between PKJ's War Journal and Jeremy Adams' Green Lantern, we've seen UP Lanterns on both books, but they're in different uniforms, and only the ones in Jeremy's book are able to use different colors of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
We have not seen that in PKJ's War Journal, at least not yet. So I asked him if there was a thing in the UP Lantern Corps that there's different like grades, there's different levels of lantern, and that there's like a certain section, a certain grade you have to be to access the different colors. But he said no. He said not necessarily. That could always be a potential thing, but the idea is that him and Philip Kennedy Johnson have been building some stuff together. There's a lot more info to know about that, and my theory is not necessarily correct, but there will be some stuff coming down the line that we will see. In fact, like him and the two of them have been talking a lot, that we know about, but they are potentially looking at a crossover come fall. So after Absolute Power, which he also let me know that he has a tie-in for Absolute Power. So that's going to be interesting. I wonder how Green Lantern will fit into that.
I don't know, but I'm hoping that the damn new... I hope that the crossover is called Green Lantern Corps or New Millennium or something to that effect.
Yeah. Yeah, I also gave him major kudos for bringing Tom Kalmaku back.
Hell yeah, man.
Yeah. It was kind of funny. He told me he wanted to use the Floronic Man as well, because it was this whole big thing with the green. And like, well, right. Yeah, you know, now he's kind of predisposed.
Yeah.
He's taken. Yeah, he was told he can't use Floronic Man, so he could only use Tom. So, okay, fine. Tom's the last one. Screw it. So that was funny. Tim Sheridan and I also talked about Alan Scott and like how much I'm enjoying the book. And it's really great to see Alan Scott get some spotlight again. But he also teased that while his 6-issue run is just 6 issues, he doesn't have any more plans for more Alan Scott, though he would love to, especially if he gets asked. He did say that Jeremy might have Alan go to his book eventually.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's just a maybe. He's like, I'm thinking that's gonna happen, but he doesn't know for sure. But that was a tease Tim Sheridan gave me
about Alan Scott
in the future. So there's some stuff to look forward to in the Green Lantern books.
I'm telling you, the Earth Lanterns are gonna form their own damn core.
They're gonna have to.
It's gonna be so cool. It's gonna be so cool.
It's going to piss off a lot of Lantern fans.
I don't care. It's going to be awesome.
I don't know if
Alan
you know.
Scott is going to be a legitimate Lantern.
I don't know if that's going to happen.
I think so.
But like, he won't necessarily be part of the core because his whole power, and that's something Tim Sheridan and I was also talking about, that like, Alan Scott is so cool because his powers is so strong and is different from the Green Lantern core. While it does have that those retconned connections with the Starheart and whatnot, his power is essentially magic-based, and it does practically have no limits compared to the Green Lantern core, of where they do have some kind of a limit in place. So,
well, you're going off of old information. We don't know anything about these rings.
That's true. We don't yet.
The power battery is completely different. The way that they charge is completely different. The former power battery used to be located on Oa, which was way the fuck out in space, and it would allow the Lanterns to go anywhere. Yeah. But this new power battery is somehow in association with the Green. Now, it may just be that the Green was protecting it. But for whatever reason, there is something distinctly different about it because it only allows them to go so far. And we don't know how far it's going to let Hal venture from Earth.
Yeah. I mean, so far, if I remember right,
he did go out into space.
Yeah, he was at the edge of 2814.
Yeah. So we shall see what happens.
He didn't leave his sector yet. I will, the slight spoiler for you, solicitations do say that in the next issue he does go to Oa. So,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know you don't like those differences.
They're
still
most likely
maintaining that there will be differences.
I think there definitely will be, and it's not solely in the design, but we'll see. I mean, thinking about it now, John has a ring. It's a United Planets Lantern ring.
John has a ring. Oh yeah, I guess he did. Yeah. Well, anyway.
Yeah, like he co-opted the Varen's ring into his own.
Right.
So I guess that will semi-explain why there's only six rings.
Could.
At least for now. It's just like, well, we don't need to have seven because John has one.
Right.
So does
we'll
Kyle.
We'll find out what happens
Joe,
on
and
from
Jess,
there.
And Guy. So, yeah. Simon, who fucking knows? Maybe, like everybody else, they just forgot Simon.
No, they better
I hope not. Have. Right. What I was going to say before was that you might not know, but there's a great number of Lantern fans that just think there's way too many Earth Lanterns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and I can get that.
I get it, but like, I don't agree with it.
I feel like Simon Babbs was created just to be created now, and I'm not complaining about him. I think that there's good room for that character, especially his relationship with Cruz, I think is fantastic. Yeah. I'm really curious about where the hell all of it's going to go there. I don't want Simon to be forgotten about.
No.
Kyle seems to be completely left out of the groupings for Earth Lanterns, at least whenever we see them gathered on the page, for the most part.
Yeah.
I think Guy does already have a ring. John didn't need a ring, but took one anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just so much that I don't know.
So the funny you mention about Simon's creation, I was even thinking about that the other day. About like how people think there's too many Earth Lanterns. Like, okay, so, like there was the four Earth Lanterns. People were happy with that. The four Corpsmen. Okay, and then Simon showed up, and he was the new fifth one. Like, uh-huh. this is when it started to grow. Where the first four, like, they had reasons and it made sense. And I'm thinking, like, I agree with what you're saying, that on the surface, Simon's creation feels like it was kind of forced. And that could put a bad taste in people's mouth. But I'm thinking it might be the other way around, where Johns was writing it, he knew with his story beats he needed Hal and Sinestro to go into the Black Ring and become Black Lanterns in a way, and they'd have to technically die. Right, for his story. Mm-hmm. That's something he needed to do. That was the story beat. But what would happen to a ring when a user's dead? It would go find a new recruit.
Right.
So I think Simon is just a cause and effect creation based off of what he needed in the story. So it's not that he wanted to create Simon specifically for that and built the story around that. I think Simon came as a result of the story he was writing.
Fair enough.
That's what I think anyway. I have a lot of questions for Geoff Johns one day. Hopefully I can actually have a conversation with him.
Right. With
so many questions for Geoff Johns. But speaking of Geoff Johns, one last thing I want to share. I got a little something for myself that was fun at Comic-Con. And speaking of Sinestro.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I had to pick this up. This was actually a hard choice because in the booth that had this figure, there was two different versions of Sinestro, Green Lantern and Yellow Lantern. But I think I already have the Yellow Lantern one I saw, as well as Green Lantern Ceramic Natsu and Green Lantern Stell. And I really wanted Stell and Ceramic to go with Kyle. But Cyborg Superman, one of my all-time favorite villains, had to have this guy.
I don't blame you.
Yeah,
I don't blame you at all.
This is from the Green Lantern line of figures from DC Direct. My one downside, and I don't know if I mentioned this before. I know I said it to you when I got the Blackest Night line figures, the Black Lantern, Hawk Girl, and Star Sapphire Wonder Woman, is that these figures, they're not super poseable. And in fact, the only way that you can pose them is like they have a preset pose.
Uh-huh.
That's pretty much it. Like, you can move the arms a little bit, but like, I can't turn the hands. I can't make it look like he's shooting a laser out of his ring. His hand is stuck in this position. Right? There's not much else you can do with him. So those old DC Direct figures, like they are, like, you can move some limbs, but they ultimately have a predetermined pose.
Yeah, and I mean,
it's a little annoying.
That's what Cass is like.
Yeah.
I had to, I mean, it took a while of like moving and pivoting and the like, but I mean, it eventually got to where it's pretty bendable, not like a McFarlane, you know, but impressive for a DC Direct.
Yeah. I mean, that's fair. That's fair. If you have that with Cass. I had a Spider-Man figure from when I was a kid that I don't even remember who the hell made it, but it was, might have been like an old ass Marvel Legends figure, but this was like super poseable Spider-Man. It had like 102 points of articulation. Like it was massive.
102 points of articulation. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, his eyeballs fucking move.
Like, you, I might be over exaggerating, it might have been like 32, but it was still.
McFarlane's typically have 20 or 21.
Yeah, it was still an impressive amount of articulation points. But for Spider-Man, you could kind of need it. Like, you could have him do pretty much any pose Todd McFarlane drew.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like Liam has his Yamaguchi Spider-Gwen.
Yeah.
And God, he just, every time I go into his room, he's got her in a different pose.
Yeah.
It's pretty slick. It has that magnet mount on it too.
Oh, right on.
Right. So like sometimes I'll go into his room and she's the Yamaguchis come with all kinds of accessories and shit. And sometimes I go in the room and she's chilling on his fireplace mantle talking on her cell phone.
Yeah.
And then other times I'll go in and she's crawling around the corner up and around his computer. So I mean, he has a lot of fun doing that. I'm glad.
Right on. That's good. I gotta get me one of those. I miss that Spider-Man figure. Gotta find it. It's around here somewhere.
There it is.
All right. So I guess with that, unless you have anything else to bring up.
Nah, I suppose with all that talk about Green Lanterns, we should probably talk about one of them, huh?
Yeah, maybe. might just be a good idea. Let me get a sip of water before I start talking more ears off. Yeah, so we've been teasing it already. It's Green Lantern War Journal number 7. I wasn't here for number 6, but I definitely read it, and it was hella fun. And this one picks up where we left off in that issue. This is No Escape, written by Philip Kennedy Johnson, with art from Montos, colors from Adriano Lucas, and letters from Dave Sharp, with the cover from Montos and Christopher Sotomayor. So John wakes up in a very, very dark place, and he does not have his ring. He can barely see 2 feet in front of him, but he sees a green glow up the top of a mountain that he's climbing, and sees some weird alien being holding his ring. But this is when he loses his footing, and then the ring flies towards him, gets onto his finger, and he hovers in place. You ask the ring to tell him where he is as he flies away from these alien beings that are now throwing spears at him. The ring has no information about where he is, cannot recognize any structures within, and he flies up and out of what seems to be an asteroid into space where he doesn't recognize any star map or any stars or star formations on any map, and neither does the ring. So he's completely lost. Then he gets spoken to from the surface of one of the asteroids. And as he turns around to look at the man, we see in the background a giant dark star symbol in the middle of space. This person that is talking to him has kind of darkish purplish skin, and also claims to know him. Meanwhile, back on Earth, John Stewart's home, his construct created little sister is playing with his mama and is doing everything she can to make sure that his mama doesn't worry too much and her mind is kind of kept at peace. But this is when we see John Henry, Natasha, and Shepard arrive at the glowing green construct house on the R&D floor of Steelworks Tower, trying to figure out what's going on and gets John's mom back to some professional help and not just the help of a construct of her daughter. Pardon me. However, the construct refuses and says, look, I'm a part of John. So if I'm helping, that means John's helping. We're fine. This is a family matter and you're not family. So that didn't pan out, and that's when Shepard says, look, I need to go help John Stewart, but I can't find him alone, so I need to go find someone he trusts more than anyone. And then we see an image of Guy Gardner, so that is a tease for something to come. And as he flies away, we see this weird bluish-white mist appear in front of the house, and it seems to be something to do with the Revenant Queen or the Radiant Dead. Basically,
what's coming next?
Yeah, basically threatening John Stewart and everything he loves. Meanwhile, John, back in this unknown space, is still trying to figure out anything he can and sees all sorts of alien races on this asteroid, try and do all sorts of things. But he figures, okay, I'm just going to do this. I'm going to get out of here. The mysterious stranger talking to him says that nothing can escape. Least of all you, even with that ring of yours. And he says, watch me. So he tries, doesn't escape. He gets bounced back hard. Finds out that realized there's some sort of gravity wall around the dark star symbol in the sky, which kind of looks like a black hole. And then sees some more alien races look like they're gearing up for war, while some other race blows out some giant horns. And as they blow out the sound of the giant horns, the dark star symbol begins to expand and explode. And this is when we see the shape of what could be Ulgrun from the first world gods appear out of the dark star symbol. And then we see next the coming of Star Shroud, So it might not even be Olgrun. I'm just thinking it might be Olgrun. It might be somebody named Starshroud. So, end of the issue. Art is feckin' fantastic. Yeah. You can never go wrong with the art in War Journal, especially with Montos at the helm. It's so fucking good. The colors are amazing. The pencils are fantastic. The emotions are beautiful. There's nothing to dislike here. If you have a problem with Montos, you have a problem with art.
You got a problem with Montos, you got a problem with me, and I suggest you let that one marinate.
Yeah. I think it's apparent to me that John has ended up in, at least what I think, the space that was the Worlds Without a Justice League world. Either that, or he's like within the Dark Star ring.
Oh, that's a good possibility too.
Yeah. It's one of those two. Like, if you figure Shepard had to come find this John Stewart because his world fell, that could be what was left behind after the Revenant Queen and the Radiant Dead basically destroyed it. Either that, or these are alien species that were taken over by the Radiant Dead and now are trapped within the ring. Who fucking knows? That's just my theories for what's going on here. Either way, I'm enjoying it. I was kind of on the fence about having a John Stewart-centric book, but I'm so happy this is happening. Sorry, that came out wrong. Another John Stewart-centric book, because we just had one, and the last one wasn't great, is what I mean. But I'm so happy that this is here. We're getting it. It's fantastic. Philip Kennedy Johnson can do no wrong. I'm convinced.
At least not so far as I've been able to tell. Not writing Action Comics or anything.
Yeah. So far I'll say not writing Cosmic, because that's pretty much all I've read from him so far was Cosmic stories. And almost anything he wrote had to do with aliens.
That's fair enough.
Yeah. Even his Action Comic stories, even the ones that were on Earth, like the first arc had to do with aliens from another dimension. And then there was the whole Warworld saga. And then there was the Phalosians.
That guy's good in space. What can I tell you?
Can't go wrong with space. So, yeah, I'm giving this an 8.75 out of 10.
Fair enough, man. I thought it was pretty good, too. I thought it was a ridiculously fast read. John's stuck out in the middle of nowhere, and I feel like he may have to choose between his family and the universe. The story is really good, even if it felt like it's something of a transitional issue, if you know what I mean there. It's like this is the beat before shit goes boom.
Yeah, I get that.
And the art here, it's absolutely perfect for the issue with its shadows and its super dark tones. I enjoyed the hell out of this book. I gave it an 8 out of 10. It was good stuff.
It was. Well, now we're going to fly on over to Nightwing number 112, brought to us by Josh.
That we will. Nightwing's not doing a whole lot of flying, especially not considering he's an acrobat. But let's get into that. Written by Tom Taylor, art by Sam Basri, with inks on pages 1 and 5 through 22 by Vicente Cifuentes, Adriano Lucas on colors, and lettering from Wes Abbott with a cover from Bruno Redondo. Another one of those really cool white space covers I am getting even more and more fond of all the time. That white space art, becoming in love with it. But anyway, in another issue that seems to fly by pretty quickly, this is what happens. Haha, you said fly by earlier too. That worked. It starts out with a few pages showing Dick when he first started training, when he learned that he has to keep his anger in check. Now, in the background of the main story, Batman's begun investigating Nightwing's sudden fear of heights. In the foreground, Batman and Nightwing head to Titan's Tower to get the T-Jet to fly to Vietnam to go after Iko, the boy from the last issue. When they get to Ho Chi Minh, They get there just in time to save Iko. During it, Nightwing blocks a shotgun, or excuse me, a gunshot with his arm plates and isn't stopped, though Batman notes that his arm should be broken. It should have been getting hit by, like, should have been like getting hit with a sledgehammer. After that, Nightwing and Batman grab up the uncle and Iko and head back to Gotham. We got a quick backup here, too. Part two of The Son of Grey, written by Michael W. Conrad, art and colors by Francesco Francavilla, and letters by Wes Abbott. So the weird-ass story finishes up. None of it made sense in the first part, but here in the second part, none of it made any sense either. this was flat-out stupid. Francavilla's art's not bad, but the story just, I have no idea why the fuck this was here. This wasn't even a fun little side story. It was just weird and stupid. But as far as the first part goes, it looked phenomenal. It was a good wrap up to that little arc while planting a tiny little seed for more of this behind the scenes dick mystery. First with the fear of his heights, and now with this note of not getting hurt by the gunshot. Makes me wonder what the hell is going on here. Is there still some sort of trace of Super Wing from their encounters with Necron?
Not Necron. Neron.
Neron. Not Necron. My bad. Yeah. Neron.
I didn't even think about that. That's.
I didn't think about it until I was just now reading this review.
Right on.
But that makes me curious. He's obviously more durable than he was before, but something is funky here. I'm dying to know what it is. It's a pretty good issue. The only other thing that I'm dying is to actually get Heartless into the book. Other than that, not really any complaints. Good time. The backup dragged it down though, so I gave it an 8 out of 10.
Right on. Yeah, I completely forgot to read the backup. As I was reading this issue, I got to the end just as I was getting off the bus for work. So I had to close it as I got to the backup and figured I'll read it later. And then I completely forgot about it.
Let me fill you in real quick. You ain't missing shit.
I was semi-interested in the first part for the backup, but it was really fucking weird. Very reminiscent of the Harley Quinn dream sequence backups we've been getting for the past 8 issues, except those were fun and stylized
as dreams
and set up as dreams, and they had a semi purpose.
It's not.
This is just weird.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, just go ahead and read it and
tell me
I'm wrong. I forgot to show Nightwing. My bad.
Yeah, we're not reading War Journal anymore.
We're not reading War Journal anymore.
Yeah, that's an interesting theory you have though. That's the powers Nightmite gave him. I think it was Nightmite. No, it was Neron.
Yeah,
it wasn't Nightmite. It was just Neron. Yeah, maybe there's a sense of them still there. Didn't even think about that. Maybe I just, when I was reading it, I just took it as he's really freaking tough and he's needing to save a child, so nothing's going to stop him.
I mean, that very well could be it too, but yeah. I mean, there's just the oddness of the world's most talented acrobat becoming afraid of heights, and then this has me, I mean, that, you know, it's like, when was the last time he had a little bit of a power upgrade? Well, I mean, honestly, it wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, that's true. So maybe that's the thing. That's something, hopefully, we can look forward to.
These fingers are crossed.
I loved this issue. I'll start off right away because I love seeing the dynamic, pun definitely intended, of Bruce and Dick heroing together. Whether it's Batman and Robin, but even more so as Batman and Nightwing. When it's just the two of them, I love seeing them together, knowing that Dick has grown up and become his own hero, and yet still him and Bruce can run a mystery together, solve it together, trust each other, and still move in sync together. And every writer has written it that way since they started doing the occasional team up, and I fucking love it. I just think it's such a nice thing to see. I always get excited when it happens. Tom Taylor really captured that essence even more so for me. Plus Redondo's art was just the cherry on top. This easily for me, honestly, 9.25 out of 10. I loved the hell out of this issue.
Yeah.
Just, I thought it was really good.
Just so that you're aware, this is actually Cifuentes and Basri that did this issue.
Oh, shit. When I was just
did the cover.
Thinking about it, I thought it was Redondo inside, but shit.
Nope. No, I did just
Cifuentes and Basri. Okay.
They do really good work together, man.
Yeah. Well, really the art still was fantastic. I don't know why I was picturing Redondo's art, because I was thinking about the pages of them like fighting that group of guys together, and I'm like, it was totally Redondo's art. But no.
the cover was from Redondo as well. Got another cover that's not from Redondo though.
Yeah,
we do.
That the book we're covering next. Yeah,
it's that one.
I have high hopes for this book.
for this issue,
but we'll see. I do have some notes, but we'll get into that. This is Superman number 12. Where's the fucking credits? Ah, there we go. Written by Joshua Williamson with art from David Baldion and Norm Ratman. Colors from Rex Locus and letters from Ariana Maher, with that gorgeous cover you see in front of you from Jamal Campbell, who I wish was still doing the art on this book, but I will accept this for the time being. So, picking up where we left off last issue, Farm and Graft have unleashed a kryptonite gas across the city of Metropolis to spread across the world, but starting with Metropolis, except this is a modified version of kryptonite gas that will actually be poisonous to humans and kill them very, very quickly, which makes it super poisonous to Kryptonians. And if they even get like a whiff of it, they will pretty much die on the spot, which is kind of nuts. Which is making me wonder about the super family. Where the fuck are they right now? They're all in Metropolis.
But they're chilling in Connor's apartment watching Deal or No Deal Island.
I fucking hope so. Keep the windows closed, please. yeah. So Clark is a little weak after his fight and the kryptonite, exposure. And I think that's Farm. I keep forgetting which one's which, but Farm is the one in the wheelchair. Is like yelling at him, "Your fate is sealed. Now you'll pay," the whole villain monologue. And this is when Lex shows up in his, I will say now classic, blue Superman Lexo suit, complete with red cape, punches him right in the face, and just complains about the monologuing. That was a funny little touch. Did I ever monologue that much? Yes. Yeah, sometimes he did. So he figures since Clark can't even step foot outside the window, he is going to do what he can to stop the gas and stop his mother, who is also out there wreaking havoc on the city. So he, even though he can be poisoned by the kryptonite, he figures he's the only one that can stop it. So he's going to do the heroic thing, gets a dome over his head, and flies out in his super suit. this is when Clark figures, okay, I got to do something. So he grabs a Supercorp uniform, treats it as a jacket, and flies in front of the entire office and says, okay, we're going to do what the hell we can. We're some of the best scientific minds of the planet, and we're going to do everything possible to solve this problem. How to stop the kryptonite and save the world. Let's go.
Let's go.
What's his name came back, and I've heard his theme song a few times on WWE. That's Pat McAfee. That's what I hear. Let's go. I can't.
Let's go.
Yeah. I can't not do it.
that dude has become Holly's favorite commentator.
He's actually hilarious.
He is. And, you know, I mean, that's he's funny. He's funny as hell.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure about an ESPN guy coming to WWE, but the switch up in commentators, even having Corey Graves on color commentary, or not on color commentary, on play-by-play, is working out really well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's actually really cool. And even having, like, they used to, for years they've had it, each show would have one face commentator and one heel commentator. But now they have Corey and Barrett are heel commentators together on SmackDown.
And they play off each other really well.
They do. And Pat and Michael are face commentators together on Raw. And I think that's actually really fucking smart to change it up a bit, give us something new. But no, the pairings are really good. When I wasn't watching WWE and Pat McAfee was on and I saw some clips here and there, I thought this guy is fucking annoying. I can't stand this man. But now that I've watched some shows with him over the past couple of years, I'm like, okay, I get it. Like, he's fun. This is different, but it's nice. And to this day, I still compare watching Michael Cole and Pat McAfee commentary a show. I compare them to the announced team in the world tournaments of Dodgeball, A True Underdog Story. It's
that's like fucking hilarious.
100% the same thing. If I ever hear Pat McAfee go, it's a bold move, I'm going to fucking lose my shit.
I lost my shit when I heard him say, "Don't look at me, Dominic." What did he say? Don't look at me, Dominic.
Don't give me that look or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You ugly something. I'll smack your face right off you. Yes. I love that.
I've been loving his whole thing with Gunther ever since he was, I think when Gunther and Jay were doing that thing and Pat McAfee was doing the whole arm thing for Jay's music, and then Gunther just stares at him and he's like,
yeah.
Okay. And then ever since then he's been trying to get in Gunther's good graces. Okay. Gunther comes out and is like, "Come on, Michael Cole, stand up and attention for our ring general." Oh god. That's hilarious.
That's good stuff.
Anyway, Superman.
Superman.
Let's go. Right. So, being a scientist himself, it's a little Willem Dafoe quote for you, and claiming that he's really going to have to be smarter than Lex right here. He says, I'm just going to do it. He gets to work with the crew to study the new genetically modified kryptonite and figure out a way to neutralize it. We then get a brief flashback to Lex and Clark back at Smallville, Lex's origins, as he tells a story to Clark about what really happened with Grafton Farm, where Lex back at Smallville, as they were teenagers, was obsessed with kryptonite because it was everywhere and he needed to study it. And as he went to Metropolis later on, as we saw, he became a hero of sorts and tussled with Grafton Farm in his early days. But then he noticed Grafton Farm also used kryptonite, and the scientific interest piqued him a little too much. So instead of fighting them, he instead chatted with them. And in the idea, in the understanding of sharing research and scientific discovery, they worked together to study kryptonite. But then as they came to, you know, some breakthroughs, he instead took it for himself, ran them out of town, as their goals did not align the same way, and the rest is history. And this is when Lena Luthor, I think his mother, shows up in her own Lex suit. Oh, it's Letitia. I know Lena's his sister, but I thought his mother had the same name. Or is it just his daughter? What's his daughter's name?
Isn't his daughter's name Lena?
I know his sister is Lena as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, God theme. Dang it.
They need to stop with the LL. Lionel, Letitia, Lex, Lena, Lena, Lois Lane, sake.
Agreed.
I love alliteration, but this is ridiculous.
Agreed. I'm looking. I need to find. Well, you finish it up. I'm going to figure this out.
I think you're right. It is Letitia. But yeah, his mother shows up in her own Lexo suit through the gas, and they have a skirmish in the skies. But as that's going on, Clark and the team have come to their own conclusions and figure, okay, let's see what Parasite does with it. So he begins to absorb the energy from the kryptonite as it was irradiated to a certain extent with certain radiations that make it harmful to humans. So if Parasite is able to absorb the radiation, they can study those effects and their conclusions are correct. He details the information to Lex and gives him the data to send out a wave of energy that will neutralize the effects of the kryptonite radiation on humans. Lex wants to take out his mother instead, but Clark tells him, look, are you a hero or not? And he decides, okay, I'm going to do this. So he begins to neutralize the kryptonite gas, but this is when his mother decides, okay, this is my chance. You're a foolish little boy. She's beginning to blast him, but this is when his daughter, Lena, asks LLO1, the Lex Luthor artificial intelligence at Supercorp, to turn off the power to her grandmother's suits, which will also turn off the power to Lex's suits. But as they do that, then we realize the kryptonite gas has been dispersed and neutralized, and Clark is able to come out and grab them both out of the skies before they fall to their deaths. Now everybody is imprisoned, including Lex, back in jail. And Clark and Lex are having one last discussion about how good Supercorp is, and Clark really sees the benefit in them. But also ask Lex one more time, is there anything else I need to know? Any other lies? And as Lex says, not to my recollection. And he insists that that is it. And as Clark tells Lois later, his heart rate didn't budge. So he does believe him for now. But he still can't help but feel like there's something going on, that this game with Lex isn't over. There's a missing piece that has bugged him from the start. That, you know, Lex's enemies have stayed in the shadows for years. Why did they decide to emerge now? What restarted their game with Lex? And this is when we also see a giant Brainiac ship hurtling towards Earth, and Lobo, who is imprisoned somewhere, smashing his way out. And next month we see in Action Comics number 1064, the House of Brainiac crossover story. So I'm gonna start with the end. That bit with Lobo, kind of confusing, because where the fuck was he? I wanted a bit more there. I'm curious about whatever connections the House of Brainiac is to Farm and Graft and why they want to attack now. But at the same time, like, that's also a bit of a weird question and just kind of forcing a mystery there. Why do they choose to attack now? Well, this is when they're ready. Like, that's very simple. Why didn't they attack 5 years ago? Because they weren't ready then. They were running experiments. They were waiting to have the enemies ready to go. Like, that seems a really silly mystery to me, but there's probably something to come of it. We'll just have to see if it's worth it or not. As for the arts, definitely enjoyed it, but I felt Clark was drawn very young looking in times. Didn't enjoy that too much. Some of the facial expressions are kind of weird, but for the most part, apart from that, I did enjoy the art. I had one other thing that I didn't like about it, but for the life of me, I can't remember what the hell it is. I think that was it, actually. But yeah, for the most part, I enjoyed the issue. Oh, it is. Yeah, his daughter is definitely Lena. I see that here. But yeah,
his daughter is Lena.
They don't mention the mother's name.
His sister is Lena.
Yeah.
And his mom's name is Letitia. It's mentioned in there. I just had to flip through it like.
Oh, okay.
Speed.
Fair enough. Yeah. So yeah, that's the issue. I'm still enjoying it. I just had those couple of nitpicks. And the art was, I wish Jamal Campbell was still drawing it. He's so freaking good. Not a knock on the art for this issue, just a few things I didn't enjoy about it. I'll give it a 7 out of 10 though. Still enjoyable.
All right. I suppose that's acceptable. I didn't feel the same way. I had all the same problems with it that you did. The art was okay for me. Again, Campbell, I do feel is a more enjoyable for me artist, but this was not bad. Just some irregularities throughout, but not nothing to really complain about other than so Clark shows up. He's in normal Superman garb, but to give an inspirational speech to the employees of Supercorp, he ditches his cape and puts on a trench coat. And then he changes into a battle suit to feed Parasite Kryptonite, and then changes into an adventure hat to look at a map, and then goes back home and changes into a new cape before going out and saving Luther and Letitia from falling through the sky after their suits are depowered by Lex's daughter.
Oh, you're filling in some gaps there. Let me just rebuttal something here. The part you're talking about with the hat, that's not current. That was in the past.
Well,
that's right. A flashback.
I understand that, but yeah. Still at the same time, it was another costume change. Have we ever seen Superman in an Indiana Jones hat just because he's looking at a fucking map?
He was in the Wild West. You got to look the part when you're in the Wild West.
If he's in there, why isn't he wearing a goddamn Stetson instead of fucking Panama Jack?
That is a Stetson.
That's not a Stetson. It's only curled on one side.
What do you mean curled on one side?
Oh, you're going to make me go back in there. Alrighty.
That's definitely curled on both sides, but you can't even see the full other side.
Then it's not curled on that side.
Wow. The trench coat, that makes sense to me because that's a lab coat. He's running science experiments. He needs a lab coat.
Right.
And that's the uniform for all the techs there. He's going to look the part when he's working.
Right. It's important to take that time it's important to make sure you do that costume change. And then
he flies at super speed, man. It takes him no time at all.
He knows better. There's been many times where a millionth of a second is meant life or death.
And he was talking as he did it.
It's insane. In any case, that's yet to be proven. After the whole arc with all of that happened, if you could say all of that, everything is exactly as it was beforehand. There's zero difference, except now Clark is a little more likely to use the people's talents at Supercorp. Other than that, 12 issues, a whole year later, and the culmination of that entire year-long story is nothing changed. Exactly like I said 12 months ago, there would be nothing important that happened in this book. Still there. Still nothing.
Well, what do you want to change, though?
I want any kind of a fucking story that means something other than I left this out. Parasite is now a Supercorp puppy instead of a villain. And that is what has happened. That's what's happened.
There's definitely some changes. He's got his own fucking corporation. He runs LexCorp now. How is that nothing?
If it was a good something, cool. But I mean, there's a big, huge whole thing about that. Like, Superman's got Kryptonian tech, and Kal-El and the Fortress can replicate and make whatever they need. They don't need Supercorp. They don't need the...
He doesn't need it, but Lex gave it to him.
And now he spends almost all of his time there doing costume changes.
Where are you pulling that from? Look,
he didn't want to year do it.
He couldn't leave the room. If he went outside, he would die. He was stuck there.
But he could leave and come back and get and do a cape change before he went outside and save them without a super.
His cape was already there.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Okay, because
he didn't have to.
Excuse me for just one moment. Excuse me.
He was wearing the cape at the beginning of the issue.
I am more than aware of that.
Yeah.
Now, let's see. That's at the end. Where's it going? Battlesuit. You changed man or not? Hold on. Okay, here. They're falling through the sky.
Yeah.
Armor's deactivated. Both of them are plummeting. Superman flies up and says, Gaia. Sorry, I would have been here sooner, but I needed to stop at home for a spare cape.
Oh, what the fuck? That makes no sense.
None of the whole fucking last year in Superman has made any goddamn sense. Williamson sucks. Ah. I wasted a full year of attention on a book that's as tasty as snot. It's not good. It was just dumb.
You can say that. That's fine. But to say that nothing has changed in the past year is a fallacy.
He's got.
You cannot like the changes, but things have definitely changed.
Like what? Other than he has Supercorp for no reason whatsoever. It was literally just a plot device to launch Williamson's story.
It's still a change, is all I'm saying.
But nothing good. There's been no.
It could be not good, but it's still a change. He runs Supercorp.
Change for the world.
He runs Supercorp.
How?
Parasite. What do you
mean?
Can
you do me a favor and explain to me exactly what social security number Superman writes down on his tax returns?
He's not getting paid for it.
He owns it. Ownership was transferred to him. You have to have an EIN, which comes from a social security number, in order to run and own a business in your name.
I need to bring up this. This is funny because this is bringing a memory back for me. So my dad, his friends, huge comic geeks, all of them. I grew up around them, right?
Okay.
And every so often, they would have these kind of debates too, or they'd be watching shows together on a Saturday night, and they would talk about shit. And then one of them, who's a close friend to all of them, but it's one of the friend's wives, Jen Gardner. She would just pipe up at certain points while they're debating stuff and say, are you, like, it's a comic book. Why are you debating this? And it would just shut them all up right away. You're looking for the realism of social security numbers in a fucking comic book.
I'm looking for kryptonite. Look, if Cy Spurrier can get into fucking physics and the Flash, then there's no reason why Williamson can't at least write stories that aren't just... He just throws shit in there, and then it will be forgotten. Supercorp will go away once Williamson decides he's bored writing Superman.
Most likely. But it's still a change, is what I'm saying. And the thing about Cy Spurrier, he might be writing about physics, but is it good?
Yeah, no, I love it. No, yes, it is.
It's not good. Yeah.
It's anytime that we get flashbacks
ass about it.
Well, I'm not going to argue that. Spurrier, I mean, I could be totally wrong. I've never met the guy, but I mean, he writes like somebody with an ego.
Why do I keep disappearing? Yeah.
But I mean, regardless. He pours all of it into his characters, and I dig that. But neither here nor there. I'm gonna say
something about Siceberger's Flash that will piss you off.
Well, I mean, I know you've not been a fan of it at all.
There's been parts I've enjoyed, but it's not like I'll be honest with you. I'll be honest with you right now, and this is going to piss you off as I say this, for me, the energy coming off the book with Wally and the whole psychoanalysis and the physics and the Speed Force and what, the whole thing has the same like reading energy for me.
As if you say Heroes in Crisis, I'm going to fuck you up.
Some other book about psychoanalysis. Totally not Heroes of Crisis.
I knew that's what you were going at. And you know what? I can I knew that's where you were going because that's where I could see. I can see those parallels.
Yeah.
But this is done good.
It's done better.
It's done better. There we go. I'll give you that.
Not good. All I'm saying is, you can hate Williamson Superman all you want. I get it. I have issues with it too. But to say outright that there's been no changes in 12 issues,
there's been no good developments.
That's fine.
If the only
if
the only changes that happened are Superman now owns LexCorp, which doesn't make sense for him to possibly be able to do LexCorp. And Parasite is a puppy.
Plus, Lex is a hero again.
Lex was never a hero. This shit is new.
Justice League. Jeff Johns Justice League.
Oh, yeah. And how'd that end up?
He was still a hero. Also... Yeah. Also, and that was outside of Jeff Johns Justice League, I'm pretty sure. Maybe it was. When did he have the original blue Lexo suit?
Brandon would know this. Wasn't that Johns?
It debuted in Action Comics. But I don't know if that was at the same time. It might have been. I don't remember now.
We're going to have to check with the library on that one.
Plus,
library.
You can disagree with the fact that he was ever a hero before he met Superman, but this is a retcon. You can't deny it's a retcon. And for that matter, I fucking like it. I'm a Lex fan, damn it. We are kindred spirits. Look at this head.
Fair enough. We need to get you a green and purple exosuit. We need to get you the blue one so you're a good guy.
No. Green. Green and purple are my two favorite colors.
Fair enough.
I already have a gauntlet. I don't know if I ever showed you guys. When I did a Lex Luthor cosplay years ago, I couldn't find anything that looked close enough to get like an actual Lexosuit piece of armor. So I bought like a little kid's version of the Iron Man's Infinity Gauntlet from Endgame, and I spray painted it green and purple.
Nice.
It actually looks pretty fucking cool. But I digress. Yeah, just like Taz. Okay, sorry to interrupt you. You were going on about Superman.
Oh no, it sucks. Well, Williamson just he does this with everything. Now, granted, okay, I came in predisposed to not wanting, knowing that I wasn't going to be into this series because Williamson is writing it. I know that going into it, but that's because I've fallen for Williamson so many times over the years that I know what I'm gonna get is what could be cool ideas with beautiful art, and all of it is gonna, no matter how big it gets, no matter how involved it gets, when we get all the way back to the when we get all the way at the end of the story, it's gonna be just like day one. There's gonna be little to no story progression. Let me not use the word changes. There's going to be nothing substantial, and there's going to be all kinds of shit that gets left out in the wind. And yes, I am still angry about the Forever Force.
What's the Forever Force?
I'm sorry, did you say what was the Forever Force?
Yeah, what's the Forever Force?
Exactly. It should be something that everybody knows. Williamson introduced it in his Flash run and then just fucking left it, just forgot it. And it never got mentioned again. And it was probably the coolest idea that he has ever, ever had.
Okay, but what is it?
All the different, do you remember the strength force and the skill force?
Well,
and
all I know that, but why is it called the Forever Force?
All of it collectively was referred to as the Forever Force.
I don't remember that name. Also, I remember the forces.
And then they just got left. There was no culmination, wrap up. There was nothing. They were there, and then they just weren't anymore because he was done. He lost interest in the subject.
I was also butthurt about that, but I will give it this. He did it so much better than the Flash TV show.
Did it? I mean,
that's a given.
That's not a high bar.
No, it really isn't.
Can a Flash comic book do something better than the Flash TV show? Only if an ant can do the limbo.
Can it?
They can get under any bar. All right. So, I think I forgot to give my score. It's time to hand Superman over to a person that can put a story together and make it more than okay in its very best issues. 3 out of 10. Three out of 10. Not two.
Well, I started with 4.
There you go. All right. Well, I am done talking about Superman as of right meow.
Right meow.
I see and, you here. And I'm going to get on to Catwoman number 63, written by Jeannie Howard, art by Carmine Di Giandomenico, colors by Veronica Gandini, lettering from Lucas Catoni, and with a cover from David the Double Helix Nakayama. You know, because he signs his name DNA. Anyway,
exactly.
We're at the start of another mission with a brief phone call between Nico and Selena, and Selena coming home, about Selena coming home. That's a nope. And then it's off we go. A man's life and a lot of money is on the line. The man is Justice Jordan. Oh boy, what a name. Premier documentary filmmaker that gets into and out of the worst places. One of which she is headed to now, and underwater and into a territory of some underwater merpeople. I don't know why I said underwater merpeople. They don't typically live anywhere else. Anyway, they aren't exactly friendly and they want to live in secret away from humanity. She's there to find Jordan and his footage, which would be worth a whole lot of money. She swims into this modern looking structure she finds to hide from the Tritonians. That's the merpeople. And it just so happens to be a building for people with legs. It's where Jordan is being held. It's NEMO, the Nautical Enforcement of Macrocosmic Order. Old enemies of Aquaman. And it is led by Veronica Viceroy, a.k.a. the Sea Wasp. They are blackmailing the Tritonians into slavery by holding the release of the movie over their heads because they want to, like I said before, live in secret from humans. Selena rescues Jordan and then takes him back to get the movie, but only after he promises to keep the Tritonian secret, cut the Tritonians in on the profits, and her as well. And they do, blowing up a whole lot of the NEMO headquarters in the process. Then the last thing that we see Selena has a brief meeting with Bastet, the cat god, and she loses another life, I think maybe two of this one. We see Sea Wasp at a bar talking to Santa Espada and the Flamingo about problems with Catwoman and asking if there is anyone else that has problems with her as well. And that's the book, man. The art in these books are always good. I love the style here, maybe more so because of the colors used with it. And I think it just introduced the beginnings of an anti-Catwoman team, or if I may, steal from the also original Joshua Williamson and say a Catwoman Revenge Squad. So let's see where this goes. Altogether, man, it's a really solid book, as I think it is every single month. Catwoman got an 8.5 out of 10 from me.
Oh, that was a really short review.
That was a really short book. All of them kind of went by pretty quick this week. Maybe I was just needing to read some comics. I had to read last week. I read Thundercats like 2 days late.
Oh shit! I still haven't read that.
Oh, it's pretty cool, man. They're setting some stuff up.
Yeah.
I don't think Brandon's gonna hang in past issue 3, but I hope y'all enjoy it enough to try.
Yeah, I still want to read issue 2. Yeah, but I honestly I haven't even started Cobra Commander yet, and I'm into that. I haven't even read Ultimate Black Panther number 2 yet from last week. I haven't, but
it is up on my tablet to read right after we get off of this.
Yep.
That I have told myself that I'm knocking out Ultimate Black Panther and at least 6 issues of Fantastic Four this Friday or this weekend, excuse me.
Because the newest issue came out today and it's awesome.
You
will actually love it.
I will love it.
Yes.
Well, interesting. I don't know if I've ever heard you say that before.
Yeah, no, I think you will love this issue. Knowing what I do know about your interest in the past, comic books and Marvel, I think you will love the shit out of this issue.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Now I'm seriously interested. All right.
Yeah, it's fucking awesome. It's the same level of, like, here's a problem for the Fantastic Four to solve, but there's some added elements to it that just make it so much sweeter. Excuse me. But anyway, Catwoman, probably the weakest one so far of the Nine Lives, excuse me, series. Holy crap, gas. Excuse me. Sorry, Josh, were you able to get on the chat? There's somebody on YouTube is saying, hi, Da Comic Boy, how you doing?
Hey, Da Comic Boy, how's it going, man?
Welcome to the stream. Happy to have you here. For Catwoman, though, I think it's the weakest of the run so far of this story arc. It's felt like it was a really weird heist. And yes, obviously dangerous, and she lost 2 lives, but really fucking weird.
it wasn't one that I was expecting. I wasn't expecting her to go in and save some kind of war documentarian.
Yeah.
It caught me off guard for sure.
Yeah. I think we're doing good, Comic Boy. How are you liking the stream so far? So is this your first time watching?
Let's see. So we are. Oh hell! Well, that's the end of the show.
I think I'm giving Catwoman. Shit, I don't know. I've read it today, so I didn't get to score it yet.
9 out of 10. You heard it here first, folks.
Oh no. 7.5. I think is. It's pretty good. Like the art was really good and it's still enjoyable. And I'm liking Teeny Howard's Catwoman, but this one definitely was the weakest of the arc. And this is after the Suicide Squad story. Like, well, dude, happy to have you here. I'm happy you're joining us. We are just about done the show, but be sure to check us out next time. Next week, we're here every Thursday starting at 5 o'clock.
Roughly.
If
I don't make us late, that is. If I don't make us late. But yeah, for sure, man. Every Thursday at 5 o'clock-ish, we are reviewing all of DC's weekly releases. We do this. We do a bonus show. Bonus show is only available for those who join our Discord. Discord is $2.99 a month. You can get in there just for the bonus shows, or you can get in there to hang out with us as well. But I guess I just wrapped up the show before I finished up our top three, huh? You want it?
Yeah, I guess we should do our top three. All right. You want to go first?
Sure. My top three surprised the shit out of me this week. Number three, I had to give it to War Journal. There were a few of them that were really close. I had a lot of eights this week. Right. War Journal in number three, Catwoman in second place, and then first place, I had to give it to the highest scoring issue this week, and that was Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong.
Oh, damn.
That's what I'm saying. Now, and good, comic boy, we'll be looking for you next Thursday, 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
My favorite moment, though, I was looking for something funny like I always do, but the art got me, man. The last page of War Journal, Sweet Baby Tom Cruise, that's some gorgeous artwork for something that's so goddamn terrifying. It is great, man.
As for me, I am still on the fence about my third place book, but I think I'm giving it to Batman Superman World's Finest number 25, just beating out Titans number 9. And that's because there's a whole lot of Lex Luthor. Then we got Justice Society number 9 at number 2, and Green Lantern War Journal number 7 at number 1, which I think is no bloody surprise. Favorite moment, though, I honestly couldn't even pick one. Like, it's kind of weird that there was no moment this week that really stood out for me. So I you're muted.
I said, no, I kind of almost ran into the same thing where, like, the good books were just good books cover to cover.
Yeah.
You know, nothing, not a singular big standout moment. But I found mine in each one.
Yeah. I think
was whatever the hell that is at the end of War Journal. Wow.
I think for me, I don't know. There's something in Batman Superman World's Finest number 25 that really stood out for me in the, I'll call it a backup, which is really a prologue to the next big story, but I'm not going to bring it up here because that's in the bonus show. So we'll save it for later on.
Sounds good. Well, I suppose later on should come up pretty soon, huh? You want to take us out or shall I?
I'll go for it.
All righty. Thank you, everybody, comic boy included, for watching. We will be back next week covering all of DC's weekly releases. Same geek time, same geek channel. And that is the show. We're getting out of here, so you have to as well. Be careful out there. And remember, in the Geek Matrix, everybody has a home. In the Geek Matrix, you are not alone. So come back next week.
Peace.